Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. The U.S. Ryder Cup team is set. We'll break down the picks, who they are, why they got selected, and of course, the fun part, who got snubbed. We'll also talk Victor Hovland, the FedEx Cup champion and one of the greatest performances of the year. And yes, it's the start of college football season. Go Dogs. Fantasy football season. Go Lav. And it also means the start of barbecue season. Formally, more on that in a moment. But first, Rex, Zach Johnson, the U.S. captain, just finished his press conference live from Frisco, Texas, new home of the PGA of America. Apparently, we're still living in the Zoom era. A couple of laughable moments where reporters who were over the age of 60 could not figure out how to take themselves off of mute. What were your reaction to the six American wildcard picks? That is Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Colin Morikawa, Brooks Koepka, Ricky Fowler, and Sam Burns.
You know what? I have to be honest with you. When that happened to Pop, we're talking about Alex Maselli. For those who don't know, he's a reporter that's been around forever. We have a lot of respect for him, but he's the reporter who was over 60 that, of course, got fooled by Zoom like most over 60-year-olds do. And as a soon-to-be 60-year-old, I was in the queue waiting to get called and panicked as soon as that happened. Because in my mind, I'm thinking maybe I'm not going to get it right. And there was suddenly so much, just the weight of this is too much pressure. I literally put my hand down. Luckily, Pop kind of asked my question. So I got the answer that I wanted, but I was terrified. To answer your question.
Those are televised picks. And we're hearing stumbling, bumbling reporters' questions. Can't figure it out. There's always a delay in asking it. Oh, it never ceases to humor us.
And we used to, I remember specifically like going straight from the playoff event in Boston. And driving down to Manhattan to do it the year that Tom Watson made his picks. And I think that we got away from that during COVID. We really need to go back because that's awkward. The players have to sit there and just stare at the Zoom blankly.
Sam Burns did not ask, he didn't get asked a single question. He just sat there for an hour.
No, he did. I sent you a screenshot because he had the President's Cup flag when he was answering it over his right-hand shoulder. It was beautiful. I sent you a text about it.
Oh, that was just from Julius Mason, PGA of America moderator. He did not actually get a reporter's question, so he's just sitting there as Jordan Spieth handles them. Justin Thomas is getting grilled about his current form and kind of what the last couple of months have been like as he waited to get a pick.
To answer the question about the picks, and I guess we're going to kick them around here, there were no surprises whatsoever. And look, I don't want to be that reporter that goes, oh, no, I knew exactly what it was going to be like. But, I mean, I wrote it Sunday night before we left Eastlake. You probably wrote it earlier in the week. We kind of knew four or five of those picks, locks, if you want to go that far now. It kind of came down to four or five different players for that last pick. I think we both agreed that if you were going to – here's where it gets weird. Who do I feel like Zach should have picked versus who he picked? He picked Sam Burns. And if you're creating a team and you're trying to create a winning atmosphere and you're trying to win for the first time in Europe in three decades – then yes, you need to factor in the idea of if I'm going to pick this guy, who is he going to pair with? And Sam Burns is an easy pick to pair with Scottie Scheffler. They're best friends. They were in each other's weddings. They vacation together. All of the things. It makes perfect sense. But when you start going down, and we can get into this later, I reached out to a statistician who had actually worked for Henrik Stenson, who was when he was the Ryder Cup captain and had put up a profile of exactly what they plan to do with the golf course in Rome and exactly the type of player you would go for. It's statistically, Zach didn't go after the players he probably should. And this is, you have to give sort of history and hindsight the benefit of the doubt here. You have to see how this plays out, but it's feeling a lot like Paris right now.
In what way? Because Marco Simone has traditionally favored the best drivers of the golf ball that week. Cameron Young is a better driver of the golf ball than Sam Burns is. Keegan Bradley is a better driver of the golf ball than Sam Burns is. But Sam Burns is still above average in the PGA Tour. He's 35th in strokes gained off the tee. He's I think, picked primarily for a couple of reasons, Rex. Obviously, he's an elite putter, always has been. He won the Match Play earlier this year. Easy partnership for Scottie Scheffler, with whom, of course, he did go 0-2-1. At last year's President's Cup, when neither player was in particularly good form. But I think listening to Jordan Spieth, I think there's also an element too that there's this core of young Americans between the age of 26, let's call it, and 30, who have grown up playing a lot of golf together. They've all been battle tested, whether playing against each other on the PGA Tour or in these cup teams. They all have the same hunger and the same mentality. Players who are not going to be fazed by the daunting atmosphere and environment that they're going to have when they head over to Rome and Marco Simone. I think that played a lot into Zach Johnson's picks, even more so than what a statistician might tell you about who's a particularly good course fit for this place.
First things first, did they not have the large logo for that shirt when you bought it? Was the large logo not available for the?
This is the Georgia shirt. I know you can't see it particularly well. This is the Georgia shirt that they gave
it from the moon
when Nike knew that college golf was going to be televised on Golf Channel, and so they wanted to make sure that you could see them from a couple fairways over. Make sure when they're getting interviewed, that's the only thing that you could see. It was actually the logo on the back as well. Is quite large. It's basically like a uniform number.
And before we continue this conversation, I also want to point out a funny thing that I didn't get to yesterday on Golf Today when you and I were doing the roundtable. Going to the last question, and this was hilarious to me. And if anybody wants to go back and look, you can see how I'm laughing and you see the joy on my face because Eamon Lynch asked both of us for a yes or no answer. And I immediately thought to myself, Labner has never answered yes or no to anything in his entire life.
That's basically TV parlance, isn't it? We got to get to break here. Give us a one word answer. I wasn't going to play ball. I had takes.
Oh no.
And I unloaded my take.
It's clear which way you're coming in on this one by your tweets, by what you've said so far on the podcast. Like you're all in on JT, and I'm not going to debate you on that. Like heart and soul of the team, whatever cliche you want to throw out there. And right now, it's really, really hard to debate that. The fact of the matter is, if you look at the top six players, those six players who Zach Johnson chose to pick, and again, Brooks is kind of an outlier here because he plays on a different tour, but those six players combined have exactly five top five finishes since the US Open. Five. That's it in PGA Tour events. Exactly five top five finishes since that time period. Lucas Glover on his own has five top five finishes. Keegan Bradley has three top five finishes. We can sit and keep going down the list. I'm not even saying that this was a bad idea because the hot hand makes no sense in this particular context. Going back to the Billy Horschel rule in 2014 and then when it was implemented in 2016, if we were all crawling on a plane on Sunday night in Atlanta, which thankfully we weren't because we definitely wouldn't have made those flights with the way the TSA line was in Atlanta airport. If we were all getting on a plane to go to Rome on Sunday night from East Lake, then yes, I think Lucas Glover, Keegan Bradley, those two players specifically had a really, really good argument to do this. But because we're going to wait a month before we ever get on there, and this kind of goes to what Zach Johnson was asked in his press conference. He was asked specifically if there was anything that happened at East Lake that changed his mind. And he kind of hemmed and hawed and danced around it. And the answer was absolutely not. Other than the fact that I met the six players for a dinner who had already qualified on Tuesday night in Atlanta. Other than that, nothing happened at East Lake. I would argue that nothing happened at the BMW Championship the week before. I would argue nothing happened in Memphis when Lucas Glover won, because it's clear that Zach Johnson has had these picks on his mind for quite a while. I would say at least a month that, okay, this is the way it's going to play out. And it might be brilliant. We may get to Sunday night in Rome and just watch the entire team high five Zach Johnson and talk about how you put him right alongside some of the great captains of our generation, right there along Paul Azinger, right there along any of the great captains, or it could go the other way. And sort of that's the cross that Zach has to bear. I'm a little dubious right now when I look at the stats, because I do think they matter. I was in Paris. You were in Paris. We saw how completely ill-equipped that U.S. team was to play that golf course. Phil Mickelson, as a pick that year, was comical. Nothing against Phil, but his style of play was never going to play out in Paris.
That feels like hindsight, though. Like Tiger Woods played horribly in Paris, but he just won the previous week.
And that wasn't fair.
At the Tour Championship.
I'm not even saying that.
Bryson DeChambeau had the best year of his career in 2018.
Not a good course for Bryson. Not a good course.
But you're going to leave him off?
That
was his best year on tour.
Again, I'll go back to you. What are we trying to do here? Are we just trying to reward good play? Because if that's the case, why don't we just take the top 12 off the final FedEx Cup points list? Honestly, I'm not even being facetious here. Like, what are we trying to do? Are we trying to actually win the Ryder Cup over in Europe for the first time? And I'll lean into this every time. Three damn decades it's been since the U.S. team won the Ryder Cup in Europe. Or are we just trying to recognize that, hey, you guys had a really good season. You've been loyal soldiers to the PGA Tour, all of those things. Like, what are we trying to do here? Because I'll keep coming back to the idea. And again, hindsight is wicked in this. And I hate playing this game right after the picks have come out, but we kind of knew what they were going to be. So we've had time to digest them. If you look at the four stats, and again, I went to the statistician. If you went to the four stats that really, really matter, it's accuracy off the tee. Again, Rome's going to play a lot like Paris, and we can go back and revisit that. It's going to be putting. It's going to be putting. It's going to be greens in regulation, and it's going to be scrambling. JT, your boy, JT, ranks outside the top 100 in every single one of those categories on the PGA Tour this year. Every single one. So, again, my question is, what are we trying to do here? Are we trying to make this a fun guys trip where Jordan clearly likes playing with JT? Is that what this is about? Or are we trying to win?
So who would you suggest? Who would you take off? Give me some names, because if you're saying Lucas Glover, I'm not buying it. Lucas Glover a month ago was fighting to keep his PGA Tour card. If you're seeing Keegan Bradley, I'm not totally buying it. I wouldn't have been against a Keegan Bradley pick. But he also has not played in a Ryder Cup in 9 years. He is extremely anxious by nature. He has, yes, a couple of wins this season, but did not play well in the major championships. Had a chance to win the FedEx Cup and didn't finish it off. Nothing in the last 2 weeks may have eventually mattered when it came to the Ryder Cup selection.
Forget about the last 2 weeks.
But listen, I think if you're Zach Johnson, you certainly had some anxious moments, did you not? At Eastlake, Lucas Glover started the Tour Championship just 5 shots off the lead. Keegan Bradley started. He was certainly in the mix through 36 holes and then backed up a little bit on the weekend. Had those players gone on to win, maybe it wouldn't have changed Zach Johnson's mind. Maybe he was completely dead set. But that would have been a whole lot more contentious of a Ryder Cup press conference if he left those guys off the team and had to somehow justify it. Fortunately, if you're Zach Johnson, it did not fall that way. And these are the 12 guys. I understand what you're saying, and you clearly don't like the Justin Thomas pick. I would just counter with,
no.
Who would you rather have? Who would you rather have?
I'm just looking at, let's look at this clinical. Because again, I don't want to make this personal, because what you're going to try to do is turn this into, oh, oh look, just
you're looking objectively at the data.
I'm looking objectively at the
data. That is one data point. Clearly.
Based on how many data points? Based on what else would you do it with? Who do I want to pair with?
Experience. Okay. Team fit. Pairings, who the other players on the team want to play with. This is their team. If they don't want X player,
Ricky is 3-7 and 5
of someone else
in the Ryder Cup. 3-7 and 5. So again, I can sit here and pick apart all of these data points that you want to throw at me. 3-7 and 5. I know JT has a good record. Jordan has an okay record, by the way. It's not great. I mean,
71% apparently in 4-ball play.
He's 8-7 and 3. So he's in the grammar scheme of things, he's barely above 500. So if that's the litmus test we're going here, I just keep going back to the idea that, and I, to answer your question, I would say Keegan, because if we're looking at this,
I don't hate the Keegan pick.
And if we're going to go back, forget about last week, forget about the last 2 weeks, the stat I just threw at you suggests that Zach doesn't care what's happened since the US Open. Again, those 6 picks combined 5 top 5 finishes. Lucas Glover on his own has that many. So it's obvious that he hasn't been really paying attention individually to what's happening here. And my guess is a lot of that does have to do with the idea that we're more than a month away from the matches. That so much could change a player's form, a player's health, lifestyle choices, whatever it is you want to factor into this. So much could change between now and then, which makes this kind of an outlier year. Because again, I'll go back to almost every other year in recent history, we've gotten on the plane and we've flown straight to wherever the matches are. And we're having a much different conversation. You would agree with that if we had just gotten on a plane, correct?
Yes. Then you would have the Billy Horschel hot hand rule.
Got it.
Going forward. However, we're recording this podcast on August 29th. The picks just got made. First ball's not in the air for exactly 1 month from now. That is an eternity in golf. To bring it back to Lucas Glover, a month ago, again, had not yet locked up his PGA Tour status for the following season. A month is a lifetime in professional golf.
I'll flip that on. You keep coming back to that with Lucas, and I will counter that with, if you look at him statistically over the course of the entire year, driving accuracy, he's 9th. Again, these are key stats who were thrown at me by someone who actually prepared these stats for the European team. Driving accuracy, he's ninth on the PGA Tour. That's his season-long average. That's not his last month average. Putting, we all know. He was not very good at putting until he found the magic formula, thanks to the Navy SEAL. 156 strokes gained putting. And then GIR, he's 12th. He's also inside the top 30 on tour and scrambling. If you're taking all of those four stats, and again, you're probably going to debate those four stats, but those four stats are going to be the ones that we've picked to look at, to zero in on. By comparison, and again, this is not personal. I understand why JT's on the team. I think he'll probably end up having a really good match. Driving average this year, he ranks 132nd. Putting average, 137th. Keep going. GIR, 127th. Scrambling, 150th. Like, I know you seem to think he's going to find the magic formula between wherever he finished up at Wyndham and by the time we get to Rome, but man, it's hard to see how he gets there.
So I think that JT will find something, and I also think Lucas Glover.
Why do you think that? Give me a rational reason why you think that, other than, oh, my gut tells me, because I'm tired of hearing about people's guts.
Because seven weeks without tournament competition,
away from competition,
in Napa is a perfect opportunity for him to work on his game. Never during the season do you have that sort of dedicated time to hit the reset button and get to work and find something.
Name
he's playing next week in Napa.
Give me the
he
example.
Says he's,
Give
he
me
says
the
he's encouraged. We don't know. We've never had this sort of time off.
Exactly.
We do not know.
There is no comp whatsoever. There is no reason for Zach Johnson to sit in that big boardroom and be like, no. He's got 7 weeks. He figured it out just like this guy. There is no comp to this.
That's why I'm going to put my faith in a future Hall of Famer, a 15-time tour winner, a player who prior to this season had finished just worse
so your gut,
than 12th.
You keep
just
coming back
once.
To this.
No, when it comes to JT, there's
give me a reason. Other than JT,
I am. I'm giving you several reasons.
No,
one,
not that are real.
His career record, his team competition record, 16-5-3. His presence in the team room. Zach Johnson, he is the heart and soul of this team. Four, the other players wanted him. Five, partner play. Jordan Spieth, their record speaks for itself. When they get to four balls. An alternate shot. Is JT going to play all five matches like he typically would? Probably not, unless he shows up in Napa and wins and shows absolutely baller form. No, I do not expect him to play all five matches. That does not mean that he will not have an impact for this U.S. side. JT, to me, was an absolute no-brainer. If you're going to nitpick on any of these selections, I think it's Sam Burns. I could have been swayed for Cameron Young, who's a better driver of the golf ball. I could have been swayed Keegan Bradley, who I think is obviously one of the most passionate members of the would-be American side. Ultimately, they chose with youth. They chose with match play performance this year. They chose with recent form. Three top 15s in Sam Burns' last four starts. That is the pick to me that you could quibble with. But JT, it's a slam dunk. Europe has done this for decades, where regardless of form, Sergio Garcia or Ian Poulter were going to be on that team. They know when they show up to the Ryder Cup that they morph and transform into different players, and more times than not, they're incredibly successful in that format. I don't know why we're treating JT any differently just because he's an American and not a European. Europe's done this successfully for the past two decades.
Oh, I'm just looking at the stats. I'm looking at
but that's just one data point. Who cares? It's one.
Well, his play also matters. He didn't even qualify for the playoffs, so that factors in here. He didn't qualify for this team. Like, there's plenty of things. Like, I'm pointing to actual facts. You're going back to, oh, he's done this well in the past.
Yes,
that's argument.
That's hugely significant. That's not my only argument. That is.
I don't think it is. Factor. I don't think.
I
it
literally
is.
Just. Like, I literally just rattled off six things. I literally just did it.
No. What you did is you talked about your gut. He needs to be on this team because my gut tells me. That's what you're telling me.
I just said six different things.
Well, because past performance is part, it's a data point, but I don't know that American captains need to put much stock into that based on what they haven't done overseas. Like, he has played in a Ryder Cup overseas and he's come up short.
He was one of the few players who actually played well in Paris.
And I'm not even – that was a different JT at a different time. We can both agree with that. And you're right. It seems like I'm picking on Sam Burns, so I'm going to go ahead and transition here. Jordan Spieth, those exact same stats. I don't have to tell you this one. 123rd off the tee driving accuracy. Not his best. Putting, you're going to be surprised there. 80th in strokes game putting this year. GIR, 146 in GIR. It's not as though, and look, we all know what this is about. Yes, JT is the heart and soul of the team, and I'm not debating that at all. I know you're right. He's going to be the emotional leader in that team room, and he's going to make it fun. And this goes back to what we're trying to do here. The idea that you pick them as a package, which I think we can all agree to, that Jordan and JT are a package, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think you could throw Ricky in there playing with Justin Thomas or Jordan Spieth potentially as well. Sure. I would kind of put
But Jordan and JT are a package. I don't know if you've heard this, but they're pretty good friends. So I don't even know how much I like that pick, to be honest with you. And I think you're right with Sam Burns.
Who do you want? You want Adam Shank on this team? I mean, someone has to fill out the roster. All these guys, all 12 players are ranked inside the top 26 in the world. They're not like he's picking scrubs.
No, I'm trying to pivot here because we've sort of worn this one out. So what I'm pivoting to is just the idea that because of what Liv Goff has done at the highest level, and we've seen the way that it has already looks. Look at the way it's impacted this year's Ryder Cup team. Only 7 of these players played at Whistling Straits 2 years ago, and that team at Whistling Straits was really, really good. Like, that was probably one of the best American teams in recent history. You kind of lost a big part of that when you lost DJ, when you lost Bryson. I guess you can make the argument when you lost Patrick Reed to some degree. You can't shake your head and say no. I mean, they were a big part of that team. And now you sort of flip the other side and you look at what the European team is going to look like. And look, we'll have this probably the same conversation next week after Luke Donald makes his picks. Liv Goff is going to force them to do what I feel like the Americans probably have to do. Because we had this conversation about your boy Aberg, that he's going to end up being on that team. And it had it been maybe a different scenario, a different time without Liv Goff, I don't know that that comes to pass. And I feel like it's almost going to be a seminal moment when we get to these matches, because it will be clearly with the European team, still top heavy with your Victor Hovlands, your John Rahms, your Rory McIlroys, but they will have such new looks on there. It'll be which one of those Hogarth twins that we can never seem to remember is the better of
Nikolai. Nikolai is the one who's going to be on the team.
That mountain of a man, Adrian Meronk, will end up being on there, I believe. Your boy Ludwig will end up being on there. It will be such a different team. And again, this is all hindsight. I'm not even saying that, it's going to play out better for them than it is for the United States. I don't know. That's what's going to make these matches so fascinating to me, because it is going to be a seminal moment between these two sides. You have the Americans who are still kind of clinging to this idea that this is the way that we decided coming out of Glen Eagles we were going to make it work. And by God, we're going to continue down that road. Where the Europeans are just going through this huge sort of makeover. And not by their own design. I'm sure Luke's not loving what he's having to do with his team right now. But you can see how it could play out a lot of different ways.
And look, I think you're somehow dismissing the fact that the American team that showed up last fall at Quail Hollow was one of the best teams we've seen as well. And yet there was still
really good.
Kind of some transition from that team as well. Like Wyndham Clark, breakout year, 2-time winner, including the U.S. Open. Brian Harman, feisty bulldog, go Dogs. Finally gets his major in the Open Championship and now is playing in a team competition. A lot of people probably would have wanted him because of his putting prowess on a team prior to that. You look at Brooks Koepka, his career seemingly derailed by injuries last year, seeing what he's done in the major championships. I know what you're setting up here, Rex, and I don't disagree with your premise. The Americans might be ranked inside the top, all 12 might be ranked inside the top 26. All of these players seem like they will get along together. I do believe at this time I would pick Europe to win. And that would have been unthinkable 9 months ago. But if you look at this American roster, and I know what you're doing here, look at this American roster, you can pick nits. You can pick nits with any of these guys. You really can. Scottie Scheffler is probably not going to be given a putt that is inside of a foot and a half. Wyndham Clark played well at East Lake. This is going to be a player who's playing in his first cup competition. Ditto for Brian Harman, who has kind of tailed off a little bit after the Open Championship. Patrick Cantlay, surprisingly, did not win this season. Max Homa, don't know how he's going to do, a ball of energy, how he's going to do in a way Ryder Cup. Xander Schauffele did not win my player of the year for 2023, did not win. Brooks Koepka, his record is so-so when it comes to the Ryder Cup. Jordan Spieth, kind of depends on how JT is going to play. Colin Morikawa, will he find a partner who can putt, who is not named Dustin Johnson? Sam Burns, he and Scheffler went 0-2-1 at the President's Cup last year. Will he be able to find something? Ricky, you've kind of gone over his record, 3-7-5. That's a lot of half points when it comes to Ricky Fowler. Like, you can talk about all these guys. I don't disagree with your overall premise. I know that's what you're setting up here. You think that Europe's going to win, and I think they will as well. If you're the Americans, and now you got 4 or 5 weeks off, and only a handful of them are going to be playing in Napa next week at the start of the FedEx Cup fall, I think you have some serious questions when it comes to the Americans, and it wouldn't surprise me right now if the futility across the pond extended.
Sorry, I went on a deep dive on can you pick nits? I don't know if that's correct or not, but if any,
irregardless of what you found,
take that, Bauer. That's true. Can you pick nits? Someone please let us know in the comments? You guys are so kind when it comes to the comments. Please let us know. No, I'm not doing that. You're trying to do the thing where you're backing me into a corner, and I'm not saying the U.S. team should not be favored. They're going to be favored
But I do not think they will win.
I'm not even doing that thing. It's more interesting to me now than it probably was a month ago, now that we've gotten here and you start sort of taking a deeper dive on just the idea of how different these two teams are. We're at an inflection point in time where the Europeans are having to zig while the United States team is going to zag. The United States team is going to fall back on all those players. You're right. Wyndham's new. I know Harmon is a rookie, but it's hard to sit here and look at him that way. But basically, this was, and I know, and I'm not even trying to dismiss what Zach Johnson and the rest of his vice captains have done over the last week or two. I know there's been a lot put into this, but essentially what he did was fall back into that same sort of idea that we had coming out of Glenn Eagles, that there has to be continuity between the teams. And that's just not with captains and vice captains. That's clearly with players as well. I'm not going to sit here and tell you any of those guys shouldn't have got a pick, because that by definition is what it is. Zach Johnson has those 6 picks to decide how to make his team better. What I'm questioning, did he make his team better?
I mean, Zach Johnson is privy to a whole lot more information. If the 6 automatic qualifiers think that they made the team better, and those are the guys who they're going to be going to war with and playing over a 3-day exhibition at Marco Simone, then the answer is yes. I do not disagree with any of Captain Zach Johnson's picks. I think common sense prevailed. That does not mean I think they are going to win. You have yet to give me the players or the team that you think would give the U.S. Ryder Cup team the best chance of victory.
I think we had this conversation last
week.
You
seem to be criticizing the pick, but you have not given me a solution. That's not good column writing.
Oh, I would go twofold. One, I'll give you two with this answer. One, the idea that 6 picks is probably kind of silly now. Now that we've moved on from COVID, there was a reason why we did this. So let's just go top 10 right there off the top. What are you shaking your head at? The only difference on that is Cam Young. And I do believe, whether if you want Cam Young or you think Cam Young should be on that team or whatnot, essentially what the PGA of America, and this is even, maybe it's Zach Johnson, what they've done is move the goalpost in the middle of the game. What they've essentially done is turn the par 5 18th hole into a par 4 just because, we don't like the scoring now, so we're going to mix it up. Because in almost every other year, Cam Young would have qualified for that team. There's no reason to think that, okay, this should be different than that year. So that
he got a whole lot of points from his major finishes in 2022.
Sure. I'm fine with that.
Cam Young has still not won on the PGA Tour. Cameron Young did not qualify for the Tour Championship.
Either JT didn't qualify for the playoffs, dude. We can keep going down that road. You keep throwing counter arguments.
16-5-3.
Take it easy, Brandel, because what you're doing is you're digging into the stats to decide which stats you like when they're convenient for you. Yours is, okay, Cam Young didn't make it to the Tour Championship. Well, JT didn't make it even to the playoffs, but you seem to be fine with that one.
Fortunately for JT, he's 16-5-3 and immensely popular in the team room, and the guys wanted him.
Popular. There it is. He's popular. So what you've gotten to is this is a popularity contest.
That is a part of it. That's why I listed 5 or 6.
Is that the best team? Is that the best team? I'm not saying it's not, but if it's going to be a popularity contest, yes, are you getting the best team?
I think that is the best U.S. Ryder Cup team. I do not necessarily think it's going to be good enough to win, but I think that is the best team that Zach Johnson could have made. Yes.
To answer the second part of your question, it's Keegan Bradley was the one, and who I would leave out would be a combination. We can sit and, again, how did you put it? Nitpick?
Pick nits.
Pick nits. I don't think that's it.
So to be clear, you would put Cameron Young on the team opposed to Sam Burns, and you would leave, and you would put Keegan Bradley on that team as opposed to Justin Thomas. Just to be clear.
This kind of boils down to any combination of people. It could either be Justin Thomas. It could be Sam Burns. It could be, how deep do we want to go on this one?
You want to leave Ricky off? You want to leave Ricky off the team? Could you want to leave Morikawa off the team?
Could be. I think Morikawa was top 10. Wouldn't he have qualified within the top 10?
I believe he was 11th. Oh, he was 10th. Keegan was 11th.
Yes. So he would have qualified. So, yeah, any combination of Sam Burns, Ricky Fowler, and Justin Thomas, who were all picks and outside the top 10 for Keegan Bradley, for the reasons that I've already argued about. And look, again, this is just kind of hindsight in 2020. It'll be fun revisiting this when we get back from Rome, because I do think there will be something said on here, because I have nothing against the idea that you want to go down the list and create the best possible team. And maybe that is a popularity contest, because who do you want to go spend the week with? Is that what, and if that's the conversation we're having, I'm perfectly fine with that. Do you think that creates the best team? Because I'll go back to the idea, and I think I've said this story before. I remember talking with a coach for a European player, and we were talking about the Ryder Cup, and kind of the old cliche came up about the Europeans just seem to get along better than the Americans do. And he laughed out loud, loudly, like a guttural laugh. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he goes, at the last Ryder Cup, he goes, you had players yelling at players, almost getting in fist fights. You had wives crying, running out of the room. Vice captains accusing each other of making bad decisions or being homers or whatever the case may be. The idea that it's all happy and roses and rainbows over there, absolutely not true. Did they find a way to put everything together when the time comes and play as a team? Apparently, because they've done a really good job of it over the last decade or so. So the idea that you need to get everybody in this team room that gets along, I think that's wildly overstated.
I'm just saying it makes it easier,
sure,
for elements of camaraderie to, sure, coalesce naturally if they all like each other. I'm not saying that should be the sole determining factor, and I don't think it was in this scenario. I would also completely disagree with your idea that they should get rid of six captain picks in favor of how they used to do it, whether it's 2, 3, 4, whatever the case may be. This is Zach Johnson's team. He now has the ability with six captain's picks to create the team that he wanted. He could have had a team with the six best putters. He could have had a team with the six best drivers of the golf ball. Apparently your statistician would have wanted him to do that. Instead, it is clear with the theme of his picks that he wanted that core nucleus of 26 to 30 year olds who have played against each other for the past decade plus.
You can't do that when there's just one player that wouldn't quite, like, you're just making that's just one player difference. It's the difference between Cam Young and whoever else you want to pick, Sam Burns, Ricky Fowler, JT.
So you would have left.
It's not as though he completely went outside the boundaries here. Like, he made one decision that was different from what the automatic 10 qualifiers for. Like, I don't get, how does that work out?
I mean, he picked Ricky, who was 13th. He picked Justin Thomas, who was 15th.
No, I'm looking at just the top 10. You were saying that, okay, you don't want to go back to the top 10 automatic qualifiers. He colored outside the lines just once in that scenario with Cam Young. Like, why?
I'm saying I like the flexibility. I like the versatility.
He didn't use the flexibility. Like, so he didn't, clearly.
But if you went to top, so if you look at the top 12 in the point standings, I think it is obvious that the point standings too heavily skew towards major championship performance. Wyndham Clark was number two on the American standings. Brian Harman, whose lone win this year was the Open Championship, finished third. You cannot tell me that Patrick Cantlay or Xander Schauffele did not have a more consistently excellent seasons than Brian Harman did, and yet they were further down on the point standings. So relying solely on this, including all of the points that they're earning from 2022 major championships, which has zero relevance for the matches that are going to be played in September 2023, to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So relying on that basically just to get, they're kind of the no-brainers, I would think, right? Like, you're going to have Scotty. He's the world number one. You're going to have Xander Schauffele. You're going to have Patrick Cantlay. You're going to have those types of players. Max Homa, who was a multiple-time winner during this PGA Tour season. But relying solely on that, or I guess more heavily in taking automatic picks, I don't like it, particularly the way that the points are structured right now.
You would just want to use the FedEx Cup points from this season. Just let's cut to the chase.
No, if I had my way, I would have all 12 captain's picks. I wouldn't even use the points.
No one wants that kind. I mean, this is where the problem lies. And we can go to our conversation, which we've had in the past, about the Walker Cup. And I think I've been outspokenly critical about that process, where there has you have. I know you have. And there has to be some level of transparency. And I will tell you that, yes, there's some captains. My guess is Paul Azinger would love to have 12 captains picks. I can guarantee you that Davis Love would just rather take the top 12. because if you've played well enough to be inside that top 12, you probably played well enough to be on the team. Does that make for the best team? Probably not. And we can sit and have a debate about what the best number is, six or two or some combination inside that. But I don't think the idea that he only made one change outside of that top 10 leads me to believe that, oh, no, he has to have this flexibility. I don't buy that. No, like no captain in recent history has gone outside the lines like that. None of them. And they will not go outside the lines like that.
I know, but I'm saying in past years, we've also seen captains who would just go straight down the top 12 and say, these are the 12 that we have. In that case, Cameron Young and Keegan Bradley were quote unquote snubs this year in favor of Ricky Fowler, who was 11th in strokes gained, one in Detroit, has had a resurgent year. And Justin Thomas, who as we documented on this podcast, his match play record clearly spoke for a lot. I just like the fact that Zach Johnson can mold this team how he sees fit. He's the one who's staking his reputation to this result. I mean, his rep is on the line. He will be hailed as a hero, as a phenomenal leader of men in the same vein as Paul Azinger if the Americans end this three-decade drought. If he doesn't, of course, he's going to be a second guest to death on podcasts just like this one. So let him form the team that he wants. Don't necessarily hamstring him by some kind of point system that an AI bot created for him. I think that's just kind of the point that I'm making there. All right, we've spent 35 minutes on these U.S. Ryder Cup selections. We'll be back next week, of course, to break down Luke Donald's picks. He'll be making them Monday on Labor Day. Rex, you want to ruin your Labor Day and do that podcast, or should we just wait till Tuesday? Do you really want to disrupt your Labor Day plans? We're not going to get into your plans. We'll do that at the end of the podcast to talk about Ludvig Åberg, potentially Bobby Mack if he falls out of one of those automatic spots. How about Nikolai Højgaard? I know you've been wanting desperately to talk about him. Sepp Straka.
Ronk.
If he gets
Give
to call
me some
up.
Ronk.
From Vienna to Valdosta and then back to Marco Simone. Yes, damn. We're going to be waiting until Tuesday to break those.
I think we do. No. All right. Whatever. Go ahead. I feel like we should be here for the fans, but clearly you don't agree with me on that.
No. No one's going to be interrupting their barbecue to hear what we have. And we probably can't even get the podcast cut, but that's a different story. Rex, how about the FedEx Cup Championship? We were both on site at East Lake for the Tour Championship. Had to run out there. Not going to lie. Had to run out of town a little bit quicker than anticipated. CBS, despite seeing strong storms on the forecast, very clear from 3 to 6 p.m. that was in the forecast, still had the tee-off times. There was a two-hour delay. We did not have the mini pod. We did not get lit up in the mentions saying, hey, where's the mini pod this week?
Which
leads me to believe that no one's actually listening to this. But we had to rush through.
I want to rush through our Sunday night right sports. Now. I want to put that theory to a test right now because you touched on it. So let's put that theory to the test that maybe we'll see who's actually listening to this podcast right now. Yes, that seems aggressive that CBS, and this is a normal thing that TV networks do, that they do not want to send players off early and run it tape delayed. That seemed dangerously close to not being able to finish up on Sunday night at East Lake, which would spill over till Monday morning, which you and I weren't going to be there anyway. We both had flights out of Atlanta, which we almost didn't make thanks to TSA. However, I cannot believe that a tape delay finish on a Sunday afternoon because you finished up early before the storms came through is worse than a Monday finish. I could be wrong here, but I don't believe that.
Especially with Victor Hovland up at one point by seven shots as he won on Sunday. I think it eventually became more captivating. I'm not sure how many TVs had already clicked off by that point. And just to put a fine point, Rex, on that TSA issue, in what world does the busiest airport in the world close the TSA line at 9 o'clock? And so the busiest airport in the world, Hartsfield-Jackson, had a single checkpoint for all travelers post 9 p.m. Absolute lunacy. There was madness. There was crying. There was yelling. Near rioting. The security line, you know, to get your ID and scan your boarding pass. Those folks started to go home because they're like, 10 o'clock. That's what time I'm checking out. I did my 2-10 shift and out we go, regardless of the pandemonium that is happening. Could not believe what I was seeing. Apparently, there is a roundabout way that you can get it. You can go through the international terminal, go to the SkyTrain, and that provides access to all gates. Not know that at the time. Luckily, you and I both got back and I hit the pillow at 1:30 a.m. You were probably similarly timed, and then we're back at it yesterday for our Golf Today hit. However, we did cover the Tour Championship and Victor Hovland is now the FedEx Cup champion. Back-to-back BMW championship. Shot the 61 on Sunday. The Steve Letito from Scotty Scheffler. And then this was an absolute tour de force. I mean, 36 under par over his last 2 weeks. Shot 63 to deny Xander Schauffele, who shot 62. In any normal circumstance, Xander Schauffele may have won that golf tournament. Instead, he only narrowly cut his deficit from 6 shots to 5 shots. What a performance by Victor Hovland. What a player. What a guy. What was your takeaway from East Lake?
And I know you wrote, you took a deep dive in sort of Victor's, I don't know, origin story, whatever it is we want to call it, in his work with the TrackMan Maestro. And it is fascinating to me, and I might have said this before, that, and I was having this conversation with an equipment rep Sunday morning about the idea that normally when a young player shows up on the PGA Tour, they're close to fully formed. All of them work hard to get 1% better. The idea in every aspect of your game, like that's why they're really, really good at what they do, because they're always working, even at things they're really, really good at. In this particular case, I asked this rep to like put a number on how much better Victor's short game is now versus, I don't know, 2 years from now. And it was somewhere around 80 to 90%, like depending on how you want. I mean, you can break it down statistically, but just the idea that he turned something that was an issue, that was going to set him back, that was going to dog him his entire career. And I don't think he's not the best on tour anymore, but now when he misses a green, I fully expect him to get up and down, just like I fully expect most of the top players to get up and down, unless they've just put themselves in an awful position. It's been an amazing turnaround for him.
It has been an amazing turnaround. He may not be the best, but he was 20th best around the green since the PGA Championship in May. Once the kind of technique changes with Joe Mayo have bedded in, Victor Hovland's short game has been remarkable. You mentioned the story I wrote for golfchannel.com, now and nbcsports.com/golf new look. Make sure you guys check that out as well. I think it's easy to say, oh, Victor Hovland fixed his short game. All of a sudden, he elevated even more and became this great champion. And look, that's obviously a big part of it. It was exceedingly rare to see a player of his caliber have such a glaring weakness. But I kind of dove into more aspects and what have gone on to this. Obviously, physically, like when he was in Oklahoma State, he was a little bit of a chubby teenager. Now he's one of the most fit players on the PGA Tour. A lot of changes were strategic. Eduardo Molinari, former European Tour winner, brother, of course, of Francesco, is kind of this stats guru, course management guru. He's been helping Victor, who is an incredibly aggressive player, not short side himself as often, and kind of maximize some of those green light opportunities. Mentally, you know, he seems to kind of always have that if it's not a permagrin, he's at least very stoic, but he can tend to be very hard on himself. He's obviously an incredibly relentless worker, and so that part has been kind of reduced as well. And then I got into technical changes, not just what he's done with the short game, but also getting back to that bullet fade, which I think you and I would both love to hit, where you aim right, come a little bit over the top, and just hit that squeezer that still goes 320. I think the most exciting part about Victor Hovland, he turns 26 next month. It seems like he's just getting better, as he has done so each and every year. And this was such a big year for him because he's had a lot of close calls in major championships where he did not play well on Sunday. He had a reputation for just winning on sort of these defenseless resort courses where 19 under par or more was going to lead to victory. Like, he won at Muirfield Village. He won at Olympia Fields. Both of those are U.S. Open caliber golf courses. And then he wins against the 29 other best players on the PGA Tour in a Sunday shootout, out-dueling Xander Schauffele. This was a big year for Victor Hovland, well-deserved. And the aerial, I think, even more excitingly, continues to point upward for him.
I think so, too. And it was kind of amazing. We ran this into the ground, but the idea that we're not getting on a plane to go to the Ryder Cup on Sunday night. I can tell you that there's a couple of Europeans that would really, really have liked to have gotten on a plane and gone play the Ryder Cup this week. And they're all tired. It's been a long 4 weeks, 3 weeks of the playoffs. It's been hot. It's been humid. It's been just awful. However, like, if you look at how well that European team, and Xander has been playing well too, you can't take anything away from that side. But between Victor and Rory, and you would think that his back would be okay by the time we come around, and even John Rahm, he faded a little bit on the weekend. I mean, it feels like one of those teams that's going to be top heavy, but man, the top's playing well right now.
Yeah. Like, all those dogs are going to be playing 4 or 5 matches. They're just going to run them into the ground.
D-O-G-S or D-A-W-G-S?
D-O-G-S. We'll get to the dogs in just a moment. I do think it's interesting too, Rex. And I asked Rory about this on Sunday, and he kind of poo-pooed it, said, hey, it's the Ryder Cup. You're going to get up for it anyway. But most of the Americans now have 4 or 5 weeks off. The potential for competitive rust to accumulate is there. That's not going to be the case for the leading Europeans. Rory, for instance, is playing in the Irish Open just next week. And then the BMW PGA, all the players on that European Ryder Cup team are going to be in Wentworth. They're going to have the Marco Simone scouting trip a couple of days prior to that. So they're going to continue to play into this incredibly important stretch if you're a European Ryder Cupper. And then you can take most of the next 3 months off, say for the DP World Tour Championship in mid-November. So I think that's going to be an interesting angle to get into. All right, Rex, as I mentioned, this is the first week of the college football season. Georgia, okay, they're playing Tennessee Martin on Saturday. I'll still watch, probably just for a quarter or two, and then I'll turn my attention to North Carolina, South Carolina on Sunday. Of course, LSU versus Florida State. I believe you're a Florida State fan. I may be misstating that, but that's the game of the watch on Sunday. What is on the grill?
I don't know if anything's going to be on the grill. You've probably heard this. I should have said it out of the top of the podcast. But so the pool, the deck, everything behind my house is being redone. And the crew showed up this morning at 6:30. Like, I will give them credit. And they're it's kind of a sprint. I'm going to get to why it's a sprint. There's a hurricane coming, and it's only going to we're going to catch the southern edges of it. I think it's heading. Are you not hunkered down? What's going on?
The latest modeling. Yeah, the latest modeling shows it making landfall east of Apalachicola, I believe is how you pronounce it. Basically, right. In like the Big Bend of Florida. Right now, we're on the very right side of the cone of uncertainty, even if it continues to track westward as it appears it is doing so in all the latest modelings. We're just going to get kind of the dirty side of the hurricane. And so, look, are we going to get an increased threat of tornadoes? Yes. Are we going to get massive flooding concerns? Probably not, at least in St. Johns County, where I am. We'll probably get some tropical storm conditions. We'll get gusts of 60. Daycare's closed on Wednesday. Cam and I've already taken out his Gore-Tex. I've already taken out his rain boots. We're going to go out and fight the storm. We're going to go protect the neighborhood, make sure the community is being safe and heeding all of the local warnings from the local authorities. So it's going to be a big day over at the Lavender household on Wednesday. So hunkering down, no. Excited to see what sort of havoc can be wreaked. Yes, most certainly.
Why didn't you just go to meteorology school? Why didn't you just become a weatherman?
I have a lot of passions. I have a lot of passions for barbecue, a lot of passions for weather. I have a lot of passions for fantasy football, which, look, we had our NBC Sports draft on Monday evening. I had the one pick. I hate that pick. I mean, you're literally waiting there for 15 minutes before you get in. I took Justin Jefferson, if you're wondering, with that 1.01 spot, and then had to double back with two consecutive elite wide receivers. You were drafting in the 10 spot, which to me...
12-person league.
You're in the 10 spot. To me, if I were drafting, I would want to be in somewhere in that 8 to 11 spot. I think you can do a lot of damage somehow, despite being in that plush position. I've never seen someone who did so little, apparently, with so much. Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback. There were so many other great options on the board, and yet you took Aaron Rodgers. Also have no interest in DeAndre Hopkins, have no interest in James Conner, who plays for the Cardinals, is going to be an absolute dumpster fire as they tank to try and get Caleb Williams, assuming that Caleb Williams actually wants to come out of Southern Cal after his junior years and play for the Cardinals. We're an absolute dumpster fire at this time. Defend yourself, because there is a whole lot to not like about the squad, including Rashad Bateman. Nope. Rashad Bateman. You're starting Rashad Bateman. In your
don't
flex.
Need to. You sent me the AI rankings this morning, which I did find were interesting. And mine's a B-, which in sort of my history in fantasy, I'll take a B-. What was your score? I didn't even see it.
I was a B+, although any reasonable person would look at my roster and say that's absolutely stacked. Colby, who was on our web desk, playing under the name 2000 Tiger, to me, his team certainly resembles that of one Eldrick Woods, absolutely loaded. I don't understand some of these decisions you have made. It actually makes me quite excited for the Hoggard Family League that I have been invited to so generously that we'll be drafting next week. I can't wait to see what you do, because right now my competition does not appear fierce.
That's not the text you sent me after the first round when I got Nick Chubb and CeeDee Lamb with pretty much back-to-back picks.
Yes, that was a good start. And then somehow it just fell off a cliff. Somehow
Aaron Rodgers was probably not the quarterback when I envisioned how this draft was going to go. But I also had in my mind I was not going to pick a quarterback anywhere in the first 5 to 6 rounds. I pick Aaron Rodgers in the 8th round. I'm actually perfectly fine with that. And then the backup, my number 2 guy, who will probably end up finishing the season for me, is Kirk Cousins, which if you go to any draft board will tell you that statistically he is wildly overlooked. And I also got Kirk Cousins in the 11th round. So I'm perfectly fine with my quarterbacks. There's plenty of issues that came up last night, but the quarterbacks weren't one of them.
Kirk Cousins, big believer in him. I think he's going to have a good year. That's not necessarily going to translate to fantasy stats. Kirk Cousins has never had a top 8 finish as a fantasy quarterback. Good real-life quarterback, not great.
But 10,
good,
9.
Good real-life quarterback. 9. However, not a great fantasy quarterback. Rashad Bateman, I have no idea what you're doing there. You don't even have a particularly good option that you could sub out Rashad Bateman for. Quentin Johnston, I liked him. Coming out of TCU, you at least need to give him to the back half of the season to get going. You did not actually say what you're going to be cooking on Labor Day. This is one of the great barbecue holidays, great barbecue weekends of the entire year.
I don't know if I can, because my entire back porch, everything that I own is either in my backyard or in my garage. Like everything had to, like they had to pick everything up and relocate it. And they're working very hard. You can probably hear them, but I don't think they're going to be done in time for the weekend because of the storm.
Tragic. At least just roll it out in the driveway, do something. This is a great barbecue. Thank you for asking what I'm doing. Hayden Reynolds is actually going to play some golf for the first time in months. It'll particularly be very poor golf. And then I'm doing chicken wings on the Weber Smoky Mountain. You love having that top rack shelf, just like your pit barrel. The fat renders out, drips on the coals, flavors the meat. It should be delicious. Also grill off some pork tenderloin, which is an underrated football snack, finger foods. Always a crowd pleaser. And then my in-laws have ordered like lobster tails from some company in Maine or lobster rolls. I'm not sure if they're lobster tails or lobster rolls. I'm kind of hoping the lobster tails. I'm assuming they're lobster rolls. That will be consumed for lunch with possible leftovers once the games get going. Lunch. Once the good games get going on Saturday. I know. Quite an extravagant lunch that I'm looking forward to.
All right. Two Americas.
Yes, it really is. That's going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. Make sure you check out golfchannel.com, which will now redirect to nbcsports.com/golf. Same golfchannel.com, just a new look. We'll be doing the exact same thing. Do not panic. We'll still be doing all of our written content, podcasts, videos. I have a 1,500-word news story up on the website right now that you can get to. Rex, you'll be writing a column later today on
Breaking down the picks. Yeah, I mean, a lot of what we just talked about right now. And again, this is not being overly critical because you have to sort of let this thing play out. But there's certainly bits and parts of what Zach has done that I think are interesting.
Okay, so make sure you guys check that out on the website later today. We'll be back next week for a recap of European captain Luke Donald's picks. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you have a great Labor Day. Enjoy those lobster rolls, wherever you may be having.
Shout out TSA.